Blog Talk Radio.
Home of the stars, through the airwaves and on the big screen. Coming to you live from Hollywood, it's Rated G Radio with your host, Garrett Miller.
Hey everybody, welcome to the show. We've got a great hour of radio for you tonight, and we're going to have superstar best-selling author LJ Sellers on the show, and she'll be with us in just a minute. She's an author of a bunch of books. They're all provocative mysteries and thrillers. We're going to actually have her back on in February to talk about her books in more detail, but I kind of want to get a sneak preview before we do that. But she's going to be talking to us about Housing Help. It's a nonprofit organization in Lane County, Oregon that helps people. And in the last segment of the show, we're going to have celebrity chef to the stars, Mr. Bernie Guzman, calling in to talk about his Facebook challenge for January about becoming a better person and what he's going to do to help you do that if you donate to some causes. So, but without further ado, let's get right to the VIP special guest star of the show. LJ, how are you? Thanks for being here on Rated G Radio tonight.
Thank you. I am so excited, and I am doing great, all things considered, with that fractured leg. But other than that, I'm good, and I feel very fortunate that I'm able to do what I do despite occasional setbacks. So,
hey, well, okay, since you brought it, I wasn't sure if I could bring up the leg or not, but since that was in the opening statement, I can't wait to ask. So you have – we met a few months ago at an event here, and I'll ask you to detail that a little bit as well through my good friend Gail Carline. She's been a guest on the show. She's a fantastic author. And she says, you must come be my friend LJ. And I said, any friend of yours is a friend of mine. So we got a chance to visit, not as long as I'd hoped for, but like 6 seconds after you left the event here in Long Beach, you went home and decided to have an event, and it changed your life. What happened?
I took my nieces to the new trampoline park, and I was jumping and having the time of my life. It was a great, it was a blast right up until that moment, and I landed on a stiff spot on the trampoline, fractured my tibia, I went down. Knew I wasn't getting up, passed out twice, so they got me on the ambulance. I had two major surgeries because they screwed up the first one. I kind of lost the whole month of December, but I'm on the mend now, so I'm getting better, and I'm able to do a little bit of stationary bike work, and I get in the pool, and I can't walk on it yet, but I will. And fortunately, as I said, I can do what I do, you know, from a chair, even with my leg wrapped in ice and even taking some pain meds. I was still functional enough, at least in December, to publish my last, the third book in an indie series that I write. I still managed to get it out there. I hope I did a good job. No one has come back to me and said, oh, boy.
There's just no stopping you.
And then we moved, so I had to pack and move. In a wheelchair,
okay.
That was crazy, but I'm kind of getting back on track now. So,
I have to ask you this, because in a somewhat former life, I sell relocation and moving services to companies around the world, and when you are posting about, oh yeah, well I'm getting the house packed up and I'm getting ready to move, I'm like, how are you doing this? You have a broken leg. How do you pack and move in a wheelchair?
Slowly. Painfully, lots of swearing. I didn't do it. Obviously, I had to melt. My husband did a lot of the packing, and we did hire movers who did most of the carrying. But I still packed my own stuff. I packed my whole office. I packed all my own books. I packed my own clothes.
Wow.
You know, things that are important to me. I packed myself. I did ask my son to come over and load all of my personal stuff into the car because I refused to let my stuff get on the truck because I've learned.
Yep.
Never, never, never. Do not put my shit on the truck. Anyway, so I've learned. I still managed to lose a few things because my husband does not take orders well. But anyway,
you've lost some conditioner. It sounds like.
I did. I lost some conditioner, among other things. Anyway, it's little stuff. It's no big deal. We're here in a great house. It's worthwhile. The unpacking is frustrating because there's so many things I just can't do. I just can't do it. And
yeah.
I try. I'm doing everything I can, but. But my office is unpacked, and we're basically looking pretty good here, but I can't clean very well. I can't sweep and mop, and it makes me crazy. So, but anyway.
Well, and can I also ask you, because, we've chatted on Facebook just a little bit. I saw a picture of your driveway, which looks like a 90-degree angle, the steepest driveway in recorded history, and you have it. How in the world do you build a house that has such a driveway like that?
Well, you know, it wasn't supposed to be quite like that. Part of the issue, of course, for us is that we wanted the view. This is a slope lot. It's got a gorgeous view. We wanted a single-level house because we want to be here for a long time. Our other house had a split level. It had a sunken living room. So there's all these layers, which I discovered as a person with a broken leg trying to get around in a wheelchair. It was horrible. I felt trapped in one room. So part of the reason we designed this house is to have wheelchair-accessible rooms, everything one level. We plan to grow old here, you know, so we want to be prepared for anything. I just didn't know I was going to be the first person going to move in the damn
to test it out, right.
So we wanted a view and we wanted the single level. And it's, you know, building a single level house on a slope lot is tricky business. And anyway, the driveway was supposed to be farther back. And then, you know, they said, oh, it's going to be too expensive and blah, blah, blah. And my husband didn't want to have to carry groceries up from the bottom, from the driveway into the house and from the garage into the house. So we put it all on one level and that's just how it turned out. So
okay.
I have not backed down it yet. I know it's gonna scare the shit out of me. I'm gonna feel like I'm, you know, backing over a cliff, but it's gonna be okay. I'm gonna get used to it.
Oh,
it'll be okay.
I live vicariously through you. You are a brave, brave woman, and I have my hats off to you. Just, I mean, really, having a broken leg, packing up, moving, unpacking, and just trying to set up shop is just crazy, crazy, crazy. But you do it all. What are the types of book? We're going to have you back on, as I mentioned earlier, next month to talk about the release of a new book that you're having come out. But what type of books do you write about, and why have you picked that particular style of writing?
Well, I write crime fiction, and I write it because I love it. I love to read it. That's what I grew up reading. You know, I grew up reading Rex Stout and John McDonald, you know, the detectives. I love the detective work. It was just fascinating to me. I have an analytical mind, and I loved them. And so that's just what I've always written because that's what I love to read. So I write books that I like to read.
Cool. Okay,
and
well.
I love the mystery. I love solving the puzzle. I do like in the end, you know, I like the justice prevailing. I like, because a lot of times in real life we don't get that, you know, the good guy doesn't win. So in fiction, you know, you get to explain the outcomes, you get to understand why it happened, and you get to make it all turn out right. And we all need that sense of, you know, closure sometimes.
Now, did you go to like a police academy? Were you like a Charlie's Angel? Are you on a SWAT team? Are you on a special SEAL mission? How did you get your background or training? Is it just from reading and being a fan, or did you have other type of training that you undertook in order to become this brilliant writer?
Well, brilliant, I love that word. But no, I'm a journalist but by nature, and I've worked as a journalist for most of my life. But a lot of it I spent as an editor. So I am so asking questions and doing research comes natural to me. But when I decided to start writing fiction, I just decided to go straight to the source. So from the beginning, I just called up the people that I thought I needed to talk to and asked them if they would be willing to answer my questions. And they have been. So I started with a detective. Ask him a ton of questions, and then from there, I have interviewed a medical examiner. I've interviewed the forensic technician. He's given me a tour of the crime scene lab, you know, and I showed him all the equipment and all the great things that they do. I took the Citizens Police Academy class. I've been on ride-alongs. I've interviewed a SWAT sergeant to find out what that team is like and how they respond. I've interviewed FBI agents. I've been to actual murder scene here in town. Oh, this is a fun story. I was driving down to interview Sergeant Kathy Flynn, who runs the homicide department here, and she called me and she said, "I'm sorry, but I have to cancel our interview because there's been a murder right now, and I'm on my way to the scene." And I said, "Oh my God, can I come?" And she said, okay, that's kind of
okay,
weird.
Yeah.
Okay, so then I'm just totally excited, you know, and I whip this Yui in the street, you know, because I got to turn around and go head to the park, and I'm excited. I'm on my way to a crime scene, and I'm all excited, and I'm calling my husband and saying, guess what, I'm going to a murder scene, and all of a sudden I had this moment where I went, oh my God, and I slapped myself literally and said, calm down, someone is dead here, have a little respect, I mean, a person has been murdered. Not less than about 10 seconds, and then I'm on my way.
Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
Yeah,
oh, my gosh.
That. But no, but it was, and of course, the reality of the crime scene was very different than, you know, what you'd expect, because I get there, and all these detectives are standing around the car, and on the hood of the car are, like, three boxes of pizza. So they're all... They're all just standing around eating pizza, you know. So, you know, and it's across the way is, you know, the body, and it's behind the little blue, you know, little blue tent that they put up to, you know, because
sure.
Eugene Public is sensitive. We don't want to see the bodies. And but it was good just to be there, just to see how it's happening. And they showed me how some of the equipment they use to triangulate distances and things. And it was so good. It was a good experience. But it's also good to get those doses of reality, because then sometimes you can use those little bits of, you know, unexpected reality things in your stories, and then it makes them believable because they're real. So
absolutely. Well, I'm going to say that's just opened up like 8,000 more questions that I want to ask you, but I'm going to save that for another day, because today you are actually here to talk about a foundation that you have created called Housing Help. What is Housing Help, and what do you do?
Housing Help is basically a place for people to come to when they're having a situation where they're either going to be evicted from their home and they just need a little bit of short-term cash to get them through to stay in the home, and or if they're trying to get into housing because they've been living in their car and they just simply can't ever, you know, when people work for minimum wage, it's impossible to save up, you know, first and last month's rent plus security deposit and get into, you know, an apartment. So it's to help people through those hurdles so that, you know, we can move people into housing and keep them there. And more important, it's to keep them in their housing. I mean, people are so close to being evicted at any time. And I've discovered that the number one reason that people become homeless is because they experience car trouble. It's crazy.
Really?
Car trouble is the number one. Really. It's a statistical fact. But what happens is people, they're working for minimum wage. Their car breaks down. They need to put $200 or $300 or $400 into the car to get it fixed. They need the car to go to work. They feel like they don't have a choice. So they put the money into the car to keep it running so they can get to their job and keep their job, which is critical to them. And then rent comes around and they're short. They don't have the $200 or $300 or $400 for the rent. And maybe they have partial rent. Some landlords won't take partial rent. Maybe they never get caught up. And the next thing you know, they're facing eviction because they put the money into the car instead of the rent. And so, you know, these people just need a little bit of help. They just need someone to write that landlord a check for $300, and then this family can stay in their home. These kids can stay in their home instead of living out of the back of the damn car, you know. So that's what I'm trying to do, is to keep people in their home, you know, when it's just a little bit of cash, you know, that's going to make a difference for them. And when I just decided when I was making enough money that I had more than I needed for myself, that I wanted to share it, that I wanted to do this thing because it just seemed so vitally important. So that's what I did.
How did this cause become the cause that you wanted to champion out of anything else that you could have done?
Because it just kept coming home to me in my personal life that this need was out there and it was so great. And I know there are many things that a person could do, but housing is just so critical.
It's huge.
You know, and I've gone through my own, you know, I grew up poor, and I've had some very close calls, you know, with being, you know, borderline homeless myself. I never got there, and I'm grateful for that. But I know that I've been close enough to know that the how scary it is. Plus, then I got older, and my sons got older. I had this son that would keep coming to me, and I'm a bleeding heart, and he'd say to me, "Mom, I've got this friend, and she's getting evicted because she, you know, they sold her house and she has to move and she doesn't have the money to move." And, you know, he said, "And I've got a little bit to help her out, but she really needs this much." And, you know, he's got a big heart but a thin wallet. So he would come to me because he knows I got a big heart and a bigger wallet. And, you know, so he was always bringing me these people saying, "We got to help them. We got to help them." So I was doing all this charity work anyway. And, you know, it just occurred to me that I really needed to just create a foundation and, you know, make it a tax-exempt foundation, you know, so I could at least get the tax write-off for the charity work I was doing. And then because my career was growing and so many people were, you know, becoming aware of me, that I thought I could kind of leverage that public awareness of myself, that little bit of, you know, kind of public person that I am, and see if I could get other people to participate and actually do more good by you know, by using my name and my public awareness to get, you know, because even if you can get 100 readers to each donate $5, then you've got $500 and you can pay someone's rent and you can keep a mom and two kids in their home instead of having them end up living out of their car or a garage or something. So I just decided that this made the most sense to me, and it's where my heart was, and it's what I wanted to do. And 2 summers ago, I took some summertime off to ride my bike, and I thought I'm gonna do it. This is my time between books. I'm gonna just sit down and read everything I need to, and I'm gonna just do it. And I did, and I started the foundation, and it was fun, and it was rewarding. And it's been a slow to get it rolling because there's a lot to do, and I'm very busy. But I've got some good good people on the board of directors, especially now, and they're gonna help me, and we're gonna apply for some grants and see if we can get a part-time person to start doing some fundraising and, you know, administrative stuff and really make it take off.
So where do you find your board members for housing help?
A couple of them I contacted because I know them and they've done this kind of work before. One of them was a good friend of mine that I've known for a long time that is active in the Unitarian Universalist Church, and she's done this kind of work. And then she mentioned someone else. So I got those two people on board. And then someone actually came to me. One of my readers, her husband, does all kinds of charity work, and he'd been involved with Shelter Care and St. Vincent's, and he'd been involved with foundations like this for years and years. And when he saw on my Facebook post that I was doing this, he contacted me and said, I know you don't know me, but my wife reads your books, and this is what I do, and I would like to help you. I'm so inspired by what you want to do, and I have a lot of experience, and I want to help you. So I said, sure, of course. And then he's just been a terrific help, and he's the one that's going to help me. He joined the board, and he's going to help me write some grants and hopefully get some money coming in that'll allow us to hire a part-time fundraiser and administrative person.
I love it. Now, are you working with any other groups to help support the cause?
So far, yes, we're working. The two of the big housing-related charities in Eugene are Shelter Care and St. Vinny's. And so we're working with them. We're on their list as an angel donor. So if they have a need that they can't meet, then they come to us and we help that family. If we have the money to help someone and we don't have anyone applying to us, we will go to them and say, who do you have that you can't help? And then they will refer someone to us. And one of the other reasons that I really kind of wanted to start my own foundation, even though I know there are people doing similar things, is that one, I wanted the ability to help whoever I wanted to. You know, I wanted to be able to move quickly so that if someone came to me and I could look at their situation and know that it's real and they've got the documentation, and I could just get them the money and get it done and not have to jump through a lot of hoops, you know, because sometimes people need money and they need it.
Well, they need it today.
Right. And sometimes I know the other bureaucracies are bigger and slower, and you know everything has to be processed and checked, and so sometimes people don't get the help they need when they need it because of that. So I wanted to be able to be a little smaller and move faster. Plus, I know that sometimes other, like St. Vinny's they've done great work here, and I love Terry McDonald and everything he's done in Eugene. He's a terrific man, but I do know that St. Vinny's has a religious background. They're based in religion, so I do believe that they do discriminate against gay and lesbian couples and families, or that they don't, you know, that those people might not get the help that they need. So I wanted I wanted people that would fall through the cracks of other agencies to be able to come to us and not experience that discrimination.
So what does housing help not do?
We don't pay rent on a continuous basis. I mean, we offer one-time assistance. We don't fill out forms. We don't help find housing, you know, that kind of thing. You know, we basically just provide short-term cash, you know, to people who already have everything lined up. They've already got a place lined up that they need to get into, or they're already living somewhere and they just need cash. And then we write the checks directly to the landlord, et cetera. Or, maybe we'll spend the money to get the car fixed, you know, if it allows them to pay their rent, you know, whatever we can do on a short-term basis. But we don't pay rent on a long-term basis, and we don't find housing for people. I don't have time.
Are there any other requirements of anybody who applies for assistance that they need to be aware of going into it?
Just basically, they just need some kind of documentation, you know, to back up their story. You know, we just need to back up their story, basically.
Cool.
We don't at this point. We're not in a position. I mean, we may occasionally. We may if someone comes to me and I'm suspicious because they look like maybe a drug problem is their issue. I may say I want you to take a UA, and I think that's a legitimate thing. So we haven't had that problem yet. But generally, we just need some kind of documentation that, you know, that supports whatever they're telling us to be their circumstances. We don't want to make it complicated.
Yeah, make it as easy as possible. So how do you get the word out about Housing Help, and how would people know about what you do?
That's a good question, and I've done a little bit of outreach, you know, to the local newspaper, who has so far not wanted to cover my story, which is disappointing. But I'm kind of in this fine line between I want to get the word out there, but I'm afraid to get it out there too big, because then I'm going to get inundated with applications for people that I can't help because I don't have that much money. You know, it's just we're starting small, and until we get the grants, you know, we're only really helping one or two families a month, and I'm a little bit afraid to get, you know, overwhelmed with applications and have to turn people down, because this kills me, because I'm a bleeding heart. I want to help everybody, and it breaks my heart to tell people no. So I'm trying to kind of find that balance between, you know, letting it out, but doing it in small, direct ways, like through churches and things like that, so that we do approach certain groups of people, but we haven't done a big media campaign yet. And I can't yet until this is kind of the most public thing I've done, I think. But with the idea that we are sending out grants very shortly, and we're hoping to get more money coming in, and someone, an administrator in, who's going to help us process applications and sort through them and be the person to, you know, to say no, because I can't do it. So
you want
to
be the good cop all the time. I get it. So
yeah.
A question for you then, from a social media standpoint, as the organization is starting to grow and expand, how should people try to connect with the group to stay on top of what's going on, and then, you know, maybe if they even want to help?
Well, we also have a Facebook page, we have a website, and there's a place on the website where if someone wants to make a donation, they can. And one of the things that I have to do is I have to get the website caught up. I have some stories to post from families that we've helped, and I've had some letters where the families have written, you know, to us and say, you know, thanking us for what they've done and kind of updating us on what they've done. So that's one of the things that I need to do is get those testimonials on the website so people can see that, yes, we are helping real families and real people who are really and whose lives have been made better for it, you know. So that's been – I'm just been negligent because I've been so crazy busy with everything, but I'm going to get some of those stories up on the website, and I'm going to get them up on the Facebook page so that people will be able to see the stories and see, you know, see the families that we're helping. Even though they remain anonymous, of course. But I want people to see that. And then I think it'll help inspire people, you know, to want to donate when it becomes real to them, and they, you know, when they're reading about real people and real kids. And I think it inspires people to want to do their part. And whether it's, you know, $5 or $50, I mean, every little bit, when you get enough people pulling it together, and it doesn't take very much. I mean, some people, they just need $300. That's all they need, that's keeping them from, you know, being on
$300 changes their lives.
It does. It's huge. And when you think about these kids who get to stay in their homes and their bedrooms and do their homework at home and not, you know, not live out of a car, I mean, it's especially important for the kids whose lives don't get completely disrupted, you know? So it's very gratifying work. It really is. I mean, it's the most important thing that I do. It is. It's more important than the novels that I write. It's more important than my career. This is the most important thing that I do, and I want it to be bigger, and I want to get to the point where I am making enough money from the novels that I don't have to push myself as hard. I can kind of cut back on the writing a little bit and spend more time doing this, because it's truly gratifying and important, and it needs to be bigger. Yeah, I want it to be bigger. I want to reach more people.
Well, let me ask you this, because I'm all about, you know, being shameless and asking the listeners to pony up here. I always say, you got to support the cause. You know, it's free radio here. LJ, if people are listening tonight and they wanted to make a donation to Housing Help, where do they go? How do they do it? And, you know, what should they expect?
Well, housing help, you can go to housinghelp.co. It's not .com, it's .co. Also, housinghelpfoundation.org. They both lead to the same site. And on the landing page, right in the middle, is a donate button, and you make a donation through PayPal. And you make a donation, and then you will get a receipt that's a tax-deductible charitable receipt that they can, and that's what they can expect. And then hopefully they'll come back to the site and maybe see some follow-through when I post those stories about the families that their money went to and how their money was used and what good it did in the world.
I love that. Now, before I let you go, do you have any last words of wisdom or any shout-outs you'd like to give to folks before I let you go for the night?
I don't know about shout-outs. Actually to my readers who have already donated and who have supported me and have supported this cause and made their donations, that there have been quite a few, and for those readers, I'm very grateful, and I thank them for that, and I hope they will come back and do it again.
There we go. So, everybody, it's LJ Sellers. Go to housinghelp.co, click the donate button, and help keep families in their homes. LJ, stay in the line for a real quick second. This song, by the way, goes out to you. This is dedicated to you from Patrick Allen Casey, who's going to be our guest on the Friday Night Dance Party. This song is called Hero. We'll be right back.
Oh, thank you.
And that is Patrick Allen Casey with Hero. Again, he's going to be our guest on the Friday Night Dance Party this weekend. And if you're inclined, I'm going to encourage you to call in and wish him a happy birthday. He is having a birthday this weekend, and he's spending it with us on the show talking about his album 40 Days and 40 Nights. I mean, who else does that on their birthday? But Patrick Allen Casey will be back, and it will be super fun to have him on there. So if you are looking for something to do this Super Bowl weekend, I'm going to assume that you probably have, you know, you're either going to be talking about the deflated balls or the Seattle Seahawks and what you're going to have and how many pizzas and calories and things that you're going to consume. And I can tell, you know, I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir here, but for many, many years, I would eat so much food, you know, just millions and millions and millions of calories. And so I kind of go on a feast or famine type of concept on what I'm going to do on Super Bowl Sunday. And this article that is now posted on my Facebook page for the next day or so, this comes from Whole Foods in Huntington Market, in Huntington Market, Huntington Beach. And Whole Foods has a recipe for buffalo cauliflower bites, and it's rated out of 5 stars, 2.5 stars. So I don't really know how that goes. But I want to go through the recipe with you and see what you guys think. I'd love for you to send me a note, and or if you want to call in, you can call into the show at 323-657-1493. By the way, thanks to Gail Carline for the introduction to LJ, and she is going to go fix some dinner. So I will see you later on Rated G Radio. Gail, thanks for being here on the show. But back to buffalo cauliflower bites. Here's your ingredients, and you can go to the Facebook page, and I'm going to check out the recipe in more detail. Share it. I want you to try it and tell me if it works. 1 head of cauliflower broken into small florets. You have 1/4 cup cider vinegar, 1/4 cup sweet paprika. Boy, that sounds like a lot. 1 tablespoon garlic powder, 1/2 teaspoon smoked paprika. You already have, okay. I'm just reading it here. I'm just going, oh, okay. 1/4 teaspoon cayenne pepper, or to taste, I'd say more. And 1/8 teaspoon fine sea salt. You're going to preheat your oven to 450. Prepare a grill for medium heat cooking. And if you don't want to, you know, preheat the oven. Roast the cauliflower on a parchment paper-lined baking sheet or place it on a grill rack and cook. You turn occasionally until browned and tender. It's usually about 10 or 15 minutes. And little Eric. My little Eric, come on. I'm going to get up. Little Eric the Mighty Chihuahua. If you want to like him on Facebook, you can. He's got his own page. But Eric has just joined me on, because whenever the show's on, he likes to sit up on the lap and watch the studio. He thinks it's very fascinating. So anyway, here's the method. Again, preheat the oven to 450 or grill everything until they are brown and tender for about 10 to 15 minutes. While those are cooking, you're going to whisk the vinegar, sweet paprika, garlic powder, smoked paprika, cayenne salt, and 3 tablespoons of water together in a large bowl. You got to taste it. If you like it hotter, add a bit more cayenne. Add more cayenne. You toss the cauliflower in the sauce until well-coated and then transfer to a platter. Here's the details, though. Per serving, there's 6 servings in this head of cauliflower. So 6 servings. 45 calories per serving. 0 total fat grams. 0 saturated fat. 0 cholesterol. 85 milligrams of sodium. 8 grams of carbohydrates. 4 of which are dietary fiber, 2 of which are sugar, and 3 grams of protein. For a Super Bowl snack, I have a feeling that may be one of the healthiest options that you may find this Super Bowl Sunday. And again, it's for buffalo cauliflower bites. That recipe is available from Whole Foods Market on my Facebook page. You can go and check that out now. I'm going to encourage you to do that. Also, this is more just of a funny video. It's, I don't know, about a minute, minute and a half. Poor Corey McCloskey of Fox 10 in Phoenix. He was doing the weather report the other day, and, you know, technology sometimes, we always say it's a fun thing, and especially in a Mercury retrograde as we're in right now. He's doing the newscast, and some of the cities within Arizona had temperatures. It was funny because, you know, like Phoenix was 56, Mesa was 60, and you had the surrounding areas where the computer, you know, screwed up, and it was like 2,360 degrees or 1,576 degrees, and Corey just handled it like a champ. He's like, well, you know, if you're going to go, you know, loot all the homes up in Fountain Hills, don't bother because they're torched. Hysterical. So from live TV, I give a big shout-out to Corey McCloskey of Fox 10. That clip is also up on my Facebook page. You'll catch that for about another day or so. fun things. And then last but not least, you know, I'm always asking people to go and like and support people who've been on the show, but singer-songwriter Joseph Eid has been on the show a couple of times promoting his album Human. We play his music here all the time. And he has a contest that he's part of right now with Rock Wired Magazine. And if you go to my Facebook page again, shameless plug again, you can click on the picture of Joseph's magazine article and vote for him. He's up for Artist of the Month for Rock Wired Magazine, and I think he can vote like once a day because I've gone back every day this week and have been able to re-vote again. I can't do it right now because it's just I just voted about an hour ago, so I'm thinking it resets it once a day. So go vote for Joseph Eid, and that would be really, really cool. I'm going to go back and play. Well, actually, let's do a song from Joseph right now. We'll play The Rock. This is my favorite song. A lot of people, it sounds kind of like dark and dreary about the song. I just like it. But this is Joseph Eid and The Rock, and we'll be back in just a couple of minutes with Bernie Guzman, celebrity chef, talking about his campaign to make you happy in 2015 and supporting some good causes.
Mother, I loved her the most. Tell my father, I know he did his best. Tell my love, who broke my heart, I never stopped loving. How guilty I felt when I ran off from home to chase all my dreams, but I left him back there to pick up the pieces. They say that rock is heading our way. They say that rock is as big as LA. Don't look like we'll make it. Don't look like we'll make it. Tell the mailman, I'm sorry, but I forgot. Give him this Christmas card. You know it's sitting on my shelf along with everybody else's in my dusty pile of good intentions. Yeah, yeah. What you gonna give?
every time I'm missing you.
Let's adjust this microphone a little bit. That's Little Margot Ray and her hit single, Habit. And joining me right now is Bernie Guzman. He is a celebrity chef to the stars and is always posting really cool, yummy treats on Facebook. And I'm glad you live far away, Bernie, because I would weigh 800 pounds if we were neighbors. But welcome to the show. Thanks for calling in.
Thanks. All right, thanks. Thank you. Glad to be here.
Oh, yeah. So you have issued kind of like a, I call it a challenge, but you have issued a goodwill ambassador type of a statement a week or two ago, and I saw it on Facebook, and I wanted to bring you on and have you talk about it. What are you doing to change the world this year?
Well, actually, every year people talk about becoming a better person, and they're going to give more, donate more, but they never do come December. So they always try to help the homeless at the end of the year, feel good about themselves. I figured why not start it at the beginning of the year. There's a lot of charities out there that need help now, so I chose to start recruiting people. One of the things I like to do is join a charity. The one thing I don't like doing is asking for money. So I thought, well, let's just try doing things a different way. But the two charities I'm involved with, which is the Homeless Youth Shelter and with AIDS Life Cycle this year, I decided for anyone who donates any amount of money, I'm actually going to offer them a free dessert as a thank you card or a macaroni and cheese. And I do a lot of macaroni and cheese.
Well, from somebody who has drooled from afar for, I don't know how long we've been friends on Facebook, at least a few years. So drooled
right.
from afar for a long period of time. I can say your food looks so mouthwatering. And I mean, and I've seen you cook everything. And I'm just like, what is it, what do you not do? Okay, so I want to talk to you about your food career in just a second. But why did you pick a personal dessert or mac and cheese as the reward for making a donation?
I just figured because it's comforting and people can relate to it. I try to always try to make everything I do universal, whether it's something that a blast from the past, but I update it to what's going on now. Because a lot of things I see as far as recipes are concerned, we still make, like, pineapple upside-down cake the way they do it in the 30s and 40s and 50s. But
sure.
I kind of decided to bring it up to date. I didn't change the recipe. I just made it a little bit faster. You know, and it's, you didn't cut any ingredients. There's quality is still there. You know, I still use sugar from Madagascar, Asian vanilla beans, you know, Bavarian cream.
Wow.
You know, only thing I don't do is milk my own cow and farm fresh eggs. So. So.
Okay. So are people near and far eligible for this, or how are you rewarding people when they make a donation? Then my next question is, how do they make a donation? Where do they go?
Actually, there's two ways. Actually, right now we're doing it through PayPal until the AIDS Life Cycle people set up my page. And basically, I guess the way it works is you just send it to Chef, Chefinla, in an email. Or there's also, you can also email if you'd like to go ahead and send a check, and we'll give you the address for that as well.
Cool. Now, do you have the, is it, am I catching you off guard if we ask for the address tonight? Or is it,
not at all.
Okay, cool.
Go ahead. The address is for, send it to Charles Casillo, Casillo, Care of the Challenge, and it's 1206 North Hayworth, like Rita Hayworth, Suite 3, and that's West Hollywood, California, 90046.
Cool. And, or you can go to PayPal and do it. Now, if we go to PayPal, is there a special way to, and if you just said it, I apologize, Bernie, but is there a special way to get to your place on PayPal to make the donation for either AIDS Life Cycle or the Homeless Youth Shelter?
Well, so I get they set those pages up for me. It's just basically, I don't know how PayPal works. All I know is that PayPal, you just kind of like, the lady told me to just have them go to your email account. And something should happen. So.
Okay. Well, do that. People, do that. If you have trouble, then you just send me a note on Facebook or email, and I'll get you in touch with Bernie directly. So that would be really cool. So let's talk for just a few minutes. Well, we've got about 5 minutes left in the show here tonight, Bernie. When did you start becoming a chef?
When I was 5, I was a little
get
kid.
Get out.
Who, yeah, I was one of those. I was a latchkey kid. Remember that term, latchkey?
Yeah, absolutely.
You came home from school and nobody was home, so you let yourself in. I think about that nowadays, I'd be afraid to do it. But as a kid back then, you know, you didn't know. So, yeah, and so we'd have to learn how to fix our own food. You know, we didn't turn on the stove, but on the weekends when my mom was around, I'd see her cook, and this kind of, like, got me interested. I just kind of did it all from there.
As a 5-year-old, what is your signature dish?
The 5-year-old, my signature dish, scrambled eggs. I'll make a scrambled egg at 5.
Very cool. Now, did you add anything in particular that was really fun, or was it just, you know, eggs, salt, and pepper, and you called it a day?
No, just eggs and ketchup. You know,
eggs and classic. Okay, so this carried out, I'm assuming, growing up. Did you go to a culinary school, or what's your official training? Because it looks like you have studied everywhere by the looks of everything that you make. It's so pretty.
Oh, yeah. I went to school, plus the fact that I've been working in restaurants. But one of the things that has taught me a lot is that working with celebrities or high-end clients, I actually work with their mothers a lot. Because, you know, when you work in someone's home, it's not about you, it's about them. So
right.
I like to know what their family traditions are, what their favorites are, and I try to always incorporate, you know, I would say 90% of what they like into the menus daily. You know, so, and I learned a lot. I mean, I worked for, like, some princes of Nigeria. I worked for Miss Universe in Thailand. I mean, I worked for a lot of people.
Wow. So what has been one of the hardest things that you've had to prepare for folks?
Probably Muslim diabetic food.
What? What do you make it for Muslim diabetic food?
Well, basically, you know, it's sugars. I worked with a nutritionist, but I had a client that was Muslim, and ate what was called halal food. It was very restrictive food, just, you know, for religion. And then plus it was also diabetic. So we had to do little twists and turns, but, you know, it came out okay. A lot of research.
So what are you going to be doing for fun this year besides cooking?
What am I doing? A lot of charity work. In fact, it's interesting because most people usually wait till, like, June or July to get started. I decided, at the end of the year, I was going to get started before the year began, you know, because a friend of mine was telling me what you do at the end of the year, usually, you know, transfers over to the beginning of the year. So I said, well, if I start giving of myself, maybe I can get some people, be a little bit more infectious and have everyone else join me. It's interesting because I've got a lot of people who are actually volunteering, jumping on board. I've got people from, like, Afghanistan ordering from me, from in our military, which I was really surprised. Yeah. Even if they'll send me, like, something really small, it'll probably cost me about the same amount of money that they donated. But just the fact that they show the effort, you know, I don't make any money off this. Personally, it's a hit. That's not a hit. You know, I mean, I enjoy doing this. So, and I get to have people on my Facebook page from all over the world, Australia, Morocco, so South Africa. So if they order something, I'll do it.
So you can ship anywhere.
Pretty much, I'm shipping anywhere. Yeah, I'm pretty much doing what. I actually started doing that during Christmas, just shipping things out to friends of mine all over the world. And then so it just kind of became something that kind of got catchy. And I've got other friends who are actually helping to get the word out. You know, and I hate saying promote because it's not a promotion.
Well, it's not a promote. It's just doing something nice for people. So what has been something you've had to learn from a shipping standpoint that has been maybe something that you didn't expect?
It's expensive.
Cost a fortune, right?
Yeah. Well, I never ship things. I've never shipped things before. I never had to. I'm one of those people where, every year, especially this year for Christmas, rather than buying things for people, I made them things. And I kind of brought them to bring that classic, you know, go see people, drop off a bun cake kind of thing. So.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Very cool.
Right now I've got two things in the oven. I took four things out. I'm getting ready to do two more things.
The work of a chef never ceases. Well, Bernie, thank you very much for coming onto the show. And, folks, if you want to participate, there's still – what's the deadline for your I'm going to call it promotion, but that's the wrong word we don't want to use. What's your deadline for this event?
February 14th.
Everybody still has a couple of weeks left, so go check out Bernie's offer. Donate to AIDS Life Cycle under Bernie's name, or donate to the Homeless Youth Shelter in West Hollywood, and you will have some tasty treats coming your way. Everybody else, stay tuned. We'll be right back after this by Weird Al. We'll be right back. Thanks tonight to Bernie Guzman for calling in. He is a celebrity chef to the stars and dignitaries all over Hollywood. And he's got a great challenge now that if you donate to his AIDS Life Cycle or Homeless Youth Shelter Charities, now through February 14th, through Valentine's Day, he's going to bake you a special treat. And he's willing to send it anywhere in the world. So if you want more information, simply go to my Facebook page for the show tonight. You'll actually see a link to Bernie's name on there. You know, like when you tag your friends and stuff. I've tagged him. Just go ahead and click that, and you can get more information on what you need to do, where you need to do it, and how to make all of that magic happen. That is always cool. So thank you, Bernie, for coming on the show, and I'm going to send you some dates so we can get together for lunch and gab more in the future, hopefully sooner than later. Also, super thanks to author, humanitarian, awesome Oregonian LG Seller. She was on the show talking about her nonprofit group, Housing Help, housinghelp.co, not com, but .co. And you can take a look at her organization in the Lane County area and help people who are needing some immediate help for staying into their homes. I think that is really a cool thing to do, especially the way she presented it. So thank you, LJ, for coming on the show. Can't wait to have you back in February. And last but not least, let's promote the rest of the week here. We've got the comic who stutters, Mr. John Cooperman, is joining the show with us tomorrow night. He's going to be my guest co-host the entire hour. I actually spent about 20 minutes on the phone with him earlier tonight, coming up with a game plan. He's going to be an awesome guest. I'm so lucky that he is taking time out of his night tomorrow to be our guest co-host, and I'm looking forward to actually having him back on a regular basis starting in March. And I think we're going to twist his arm and have him be our Hollywood correspondent. And then Friday night, again, we've got Patrick Allen Casey. He is spending his birthday with us, and we're going to be playing songs from his album 40 Days and 40 Nights in Hour 1. I can't wait to have you be part of the show. We have so many things going on in the month of February and into March, into April and May already, believe it or not, it's true, and I am excited that you will be part of it to share with me. If you're liking the show tonight, please follow the show. You can go ahead and click the little follow button. You'll get an email or text alert every day right before the show is on, so you know the right link to press. If you like the show but can't listen at 7 o'clock, don't worry. The show is always available on demand. You can also click the little iTunes button and download this as a podcast for your listening enjoyment whenever the mood strikes you. That's always cool, especially if you have long commutes. You can just plug it into your USB port or Bluetooth or whatever and listen to me instead of boring old regular radio on your commutes. You can do that. And the last plug of the day, like the Rated G Radio Facebook page. I post lots of interesting stuff about the various guests and things like that. And, of course, we'll always keep you updated. We're live Monday through Friday, 7 o'clock Pacific Standard Time, and we will see you tomorrow night. Don't drive distracted, and it's my pleasure having you here. Thank you very, very much. See you soon.
You've been listening to Rated G Radio.